It's time to step inside the Iketagon with your host, Ike Feldman.
What's up, everybody? It's your boy, Ike Feldman from the Iketagon, IKEIKETAGON.com, at Iketagon Everything, Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, Instagram. What else? TikTok is the new one. Before I get into our wonderful episode with guest Annie Sukoff at @ANDY_SUEKOFF and the other guest at Harry Mack at BB Harry Mack, before I'm being joined by the wonderful local media members and we discuss the biggest stories and results and takeaways from UFC 273, which just happened yesterday, I just want to tell you guys that I made a TikTok. I made two posts. One was taken down. The other was not. And I think I got one like so far. So one for one. Let's go! Efficient, baby. But I was sold on making a TikTok. If you guys have been following along Aljamain Sterling's social media, a wonderful person by the name of Jake Fine, at Jake Fine Martial Arts, who is a martial artist himself, but more prominent, is a young, talented media member who has an eye of the tiger. No, he has an excellent eye, like a UFC embedded eye. Even better, he's young. I think he's like 21, 22 years old. Very talented the way he captures and films Aljo's camps, Manimal, John Beneducci's documentary. Jake Fine does it all. When I was at Sarah's BJJ, I think it was about a week and a half ago, he was there filming Aljo in the last leg of his training camp before the weight cut started to just deplete him. And then Caitlin Chookagian, blonde fighter, was also in the gym that day, and Jake Fine was interviewing her. And I got to talking with Jake, gave him my elevator pitch about who I am, what I do. And he says, yeah, bro, got to make a TikTok, you know? Can't get those click clocks if you ain't making that TikTok. So I was like, dude, I don't know what you just said, but I'm sold. So, Jake Fine, I made a TikTok. I followed your guidance. And now I am more of a social media addict. So, thank you, brother. Forget about that. Forget about TikTok. Let's get into everything. UFC 273 with Annie Sukoff and Harry Mack. Enjoy.
It's time to step inside the Iketagon with your host, Ike Feldman.
For the winner by split decision, and now the undisputed UFC bantamweight champion of the world, Aljamain Hawkmaster!
Thank you, Bruce Buffer. Thank you, UFC, for putting on an amazing show. And thank you, Aljamain Funk Master Sterling, for showing up and representing Strong Island, New York, baby. Oh, my goodness. I had two friends over watching the fights a year ago at UFC 259. Both haters, both commenting with the wave of trolls on social media. I was able to convert one of them pre-fight. I said, this is your last chance to be an Aljamain fan, to represent somebody who grew up 30 minutes from us. Come on, Eric. Yes, I'm calling him out. He says, no, Team Russia all the way. I go, get the hell out of my house. Give me my pizza money. I'll see you later, because I am being joined by Andy Sukoff at Andy _SUEKOFF. And of course, the Bookies Basement at BB Harry Mack, the Harry Mack Daddy. Guys, I really appreciate the time. What's going on, boys? We're in the gallery view, so let's see everybody's wonderful setup. Andy looks like he's been working 24 hours straight, which is not far from the truth. Harry looks like he made a bunch of money, which is very true. What's up?
That's right.
How are we doing?
How are we doing, brother? Thank you. Thank you for having us on. Always a pleasure.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Definitely glad to be here.
So, guys, what was as you heard that, and I was like, Bruce Buffer, the undisputed new, and you could see both of the Jan and Sterling's faces. Like, did we win? Did we not win? It was the same with me. I have to admit, I did make the prayer symbols. I was looking up. Let's go. Come on. What do we got? What do we got? So happy. So happy we got the win. What was your guys' first reactions last night?
Oh, man, dude. I mean, I was in the same boat. Heart fucking pounding through my chest. You know what I mean? I'm standing up in front of the TV like a maniac.
You got your mortgage on it, though.
That's right. Yeah, they announced Aljo first. I'm like, oh, great. We got a fucking split. Awesome. That's great. Fucking Florida judging. And yeah, Jan gets the next card. And I guess I'll preface this with, I had it 1-2-3 Aljo. I didn't give Aljo a 10-8 in the second, but I absolutely think there's a very valid argument for it. But I had rounds 1, 2, and 3 for Aljo, 4, 5 for Jan. So that was my scorecard. So I had no idea how it was going to go. I would be 100% lying if I said I was confident the decision was coming. Like, you know, that was my card, but you can never trust these judges these days to actually get it right. But yeah, then they let it rip, and man, I mean, like you said, elated, dude, through the moon. Nobody deserves it more than Aljo does. It makes me very happy to see this victory lap he's taken right now. Well, well deserved. Took so much shit for something that was not his fault and came out and just implemented a perfect game plan. Absolutely perfect game plan. And then people are going to have their complaints that is what it is. I don't really give a shit. He certainly shouldn't give a shit. You know what I mean? He came in and did exactly what he had to do, to something a lot of people thought there was no way that he could do. And he did it, man. And he is now the champ, the undisputed champion of the fucking world. Long Island zone.
100%. And we'll get to the judging. I'm glad you brought that up. But yeah, Andy, what was your initial thoughts?
So I actually had Jan winning the fight. I thought Jan won the first round.
Wow.
This might have just been, I don't know, since 5:30 in the morning, might have been like in those moments of doing one of these that maybe I missed something in the first round, but it didn't seem like a lot was happening. But what was, it was Jan dictating it. Definitely had Aljo winning 2 and 3 and Jan 4 and 5. I would have easily seen a 10-8 in one of those rounds, and seeing a 47-47 draw would not have been shocked by that. And I was almost kind of expecting that. But what, obviously, once they announced certainly, I was like, good. I'd rather that.
And now, boys, are we getting the trilogy?
Absolutely.
I think it's, I mean, the TJ Dillashaw fight, right? Does TJ have to fight anybody next, or is he?
No, because he's technically coming off a win in that Sandhagen fight. That was like a number one contender fight. Although I personally think Corey won that fight, but you know, Corey got Yeah. Corey got his shot, but it sounds like Dana was saying it's TJ next.
Makes sense. Obviously former champion. I think the hype is going to be great. You see TJ already giving the finger to the camera. Pillashaw, actually the Aljo hater who I was watching with, actually had to find that funny, TJ Pillashaw. So I think it's, the proof is in the pudding already. That's going to be a phenomenal promotional fight. So the first round, Andy, why were you scoring it for Jan? Was it again, I'm watching with a Jan fan as well. He goes, oh, he cage control, man, octagon control. He had Aljo against the fence. And I was like, well, did Aljo land more kicks?
And octagon control also doesn't score unless damage is 100% equal. That's the only time control really scores, or that's how it's supposed to be, even though judges don't actually fucking do it that way.
And like I said, it didn't seem like really anything was happening in that first round. And I mean, they even said on the broadcast, like, really nothing went on. But like I said, what it seemed like when the action was happening in that round, it was Jan dictating it more so than Aljo.
I kind of thought the opposite, actually. So I thought Aljo did a really good job. Like, he was fighting off his back foot, but he controlled the range. I think Aljo controlled where the exchanges were taking place for the most part. Because you could see Aljo would slip out at the end of those combos. Jan would get, you could kind of see visible frustration at points. And then he'd have to reset, kind of start his whole approach over, walk Aljo down. A lot of lateral movement from Aljo. He made it very tough to pin him down up against the cage or anything like that. So I get the optics of it. You're fighting off your back foot. It's always going to look that way. But I thought Aljo actually did a really good job controlling range.
Go ahead.
Sorry, like to your point, like where I forgot who tweeted it last night. I think it was Bilal Muhammad who said, you know, Jan's fighting angry, Aljo's fighting with range. We saw that in rounds 2 and 3 where Aljo really took control and where you could have seen that 10-8 round where he was fighting a lot smarter and using Jan's rage against him.
Yeah, I agree with that. As soon as he got him to the floor, it was like, oh my gosh, like this is what he was trying to do in the first fight. But yeah, in that first round, if this is a dance that is being scored by how much damage, like Jan's controlling the dance, but Aljo's stepping on the toes of Jan, if that makes sense. Like Jan's controlling the dance, but Aljo's landing more damage. And even if the strikes were 12-8, it's like a lot of people, I was kind of like educating the guys I'm watching. I'm like, yeah, it's supposed to be damage. It's like maybe he landed 12 strikes. It really bit Jan in the ass to take that round off to download. But yeah, Aljo with the takedown, man, that was, woo. No 10-8, Harry? You said, is that true?
I personally, I didn't score it a 10-8, but I absolutely see the argument. I think I would have had to have seen a little bit more damage from Aljo to really feel comfortable giving a 10-8 myself. But I mean, listen, he dominated the round. He did. He controlled him. What was it? I think 3.5-4 minutes out of the round. Like, yes. The vast majority of it. And he was doing damage too. He was getting off some good ground and pound in the second. So if there was a 10-8 round, that was definitely the one.
Again, we're being joined by at BB Harry Mack and at Andy_Sukoff. So Andy, how do you see the Aljo fight going with TJ Dillashaw?
Honestly, I don't know. I want to see how they look in their fight camps. I would like to think that Aljo can handle TJ no problem, but we've seen TJ take down some of the best in that division. I thought he beat Dominic Cruz, and now I'm going back 100 years ago at this point, but I think he beat Dominic Cruz in Boston that night. So he's beaten the upper echelon of people. He was champion for quite a while. You know, he's making his way back into title contendership after suspension. So he definitely has that pedigree. And now we've seen that Aljo can beat the best of the best as well. Beats Peter Yan. Can he beat Dillashaw? I believe he can, but definitely want to see how everybody comes out of the camps before I make those predictions.
Are you okay with the curses? Like, do you have the and there's nothing wrong, the virgin ears, that it's like you have to cover up your ears because TJ is gonna curse Aljo. We heard him in the post fight. Like, at first I was like, all right, man, this is the classy samurai martial artist. He's like, motherfuck you. And I was like, holy shit. I was like, you know what, lean into it, Aljo. I go, you deserve it. Are you okay with the, I mean, Covington's opened the door, kicked it off the hinges. Like, are we okay with the age we're in? You can kill everybody. Man. You can curse out everybody. Is that how it
Look,
is?
Look, I think anytime you're allowing fighters to show personality and be relatable and kind of just be human beings, I think that's a good thing.
Okay.
Yeah, I think I said fuck to my parents for the first time when I was 8 years old, so I couldn't care less.
Fantastic. And what do you guys make of the Henry Cejudo is back in the pool? He put a toenail in the pool.
Oh, bullshit.
Not a testing pool. Oh, you don't believe it. You think it's just.
No. I think he's just. I think Henry's just being Henry. But I mean, who knows? If he comes back, I would love to see a fight between him and Aljo. That was something they were talking about for a while when Aljo was owed a title shot by the UFC and just kind of passed over for a few years ago. But, yeah, man, I don't know. I would definitely like to see it, but I don't buy that he's like actually coming back.
Did you guys catch any of Ray Longo screaming? Aljo, look at fucking Jan. Look at him right now.
Look at this motherfucker.
Okay, it was something like that. I the first time I never listened to it again, I was like, this is like vintage Ray Longo. Did you guys, was it coming off the screen? Obviously with you, Harry, but what about you?
Oh, yeah.
You felt
it? No, you could hear it. I'm basically hearing like the Sopranos in my head as he's as he's yelling at Aljo. I can just picture James Gandolfini, may he rest in peace, doing the exact same thing.
That would have been a great biopic or something. James Gandolfini playing Ray Longo. Who would have played Matt Serra? Come on.
That's a tough one.
Yeah.
Who would have played Chris Weidman? Could we figure that out?
Someone large.
Yeah. I mean, if the guy who played Jackie Aprile Jr. put on like 50 pounds of muscle, he might have been able to do it. He looks like him a little bit.
Jackie who?
Did you watch The Sopranos?
Yes. I don't know.
Jackie Aprile Jr., the first boss's son, the one who was dating Meadow like in season 4 and then got whacked.
Jeez, dating Meadow. I mean, she had a couple of boyfriends. That's yeah. Huge. Did you just watch The Sopranos? That's not fair.
Within the last few months, yes.
Oh. That's a deep cut reference. that's a deep cut.
I was like, what? I go, I just remember, I don't remember the actor's name, where Tony's shooting him on his porch, the diner scene. Like, there's images. Yeah. I haven't seen it since, what was it, 06, 07, something like that?
Something like that.
A long time.
It's on HBO Max, so I barreled through it over the course of like a couple months.
Have you guys seen Moon Knight at all? Is that?
Yes.
Yeah.
Dude, out of nowhere, out of freaking nowhere. And I'm like, dude,
Moon Knight rules. Moon Knight absolutely rules. I don't know if either of you are into like comics, read comics, but there's a Moon Knight run written by Jeff Lemire that is like one of my favorite runs of any comic ever. Very, very good fun. Recommend it. And the show has been like pulling from it a good amount, which is very fun to see.
I was so casual. Was it Cartoon Network, the late night show? Was it Ghost Knight or something? You guys remember that guy?
Space Ghost.
Space
yes,
Ghost.
Yes.
That's who I
yes.
thought this guy was. I'm like, Space Ghost, man. I was like, you really took a dark turn. One more comic book reference. You guys see the Batman yet? Thoughts? If so.
Yep.
Strong.
Very good.
All good. I wish knew going into it that it was a young Batman. I didn't know that it was year one or year two.
Yeah, I had read that somewhere. It's like a more like an origin Batman. Yeah. But that was kind of cool. It was kind of cool to see like a different take on the character.
Yeah, it makes sense too. Like if he's in year one or 18, 24 months, like he would be exhausted. He would be nocturnal, not care about day. Like Jason Burgos, who was supposed to join us, we would have ripped him. He didn't like it. He liked the Nolan Batman. He thought it was cleaner, like the Inception kind of clean cut Batman. I like the gritty Gotham. It was very dark, depressive. I know we didn't get much, maybe dialogue wise, out of Pattinson, but I think the facial expressions at the funeral when he's like just staring at Catwoman, I thought it was like you got
crushed
from it.
Like I am Vengeance is a great line though.
Yeah, that's tremendous.
I missed it. What'd you say?
When he goes, I am Vengeance, like right at the beginning.
Did you notice that the first scene did steal from The Dark Knight when, like, in the beginning of The Dark Knight, no, dude, we're not making deals tonight. The bat signal's out. They played homage a couple times, a couple of the Selena Kyle, whenever she was on screen, they did the eerie, scratchy, like, violins, very similar to the Michelle Pfeiffer from 92?
Yeah.
I like the homages, but this one was... Jeffrey Wright was phenomenal. I've been trying to reach you. Paul Dano was great. And
dude, I had no idea.
Joker scene out.
I had no idea it was Colin Farrell. I like refused to believe that until I looked up the cast.
Sweetheart.
Dude, he crushed it. And I can't imagine. Like, apparently he wore like a facial like prosthesis, like a full fake face. Cause I was like, that's not Colin Farrell. I know what that guy looks like. That's not what he looks like.
100 yeah. And I'm sure he enjoyed the process. Like, you literally just have to eat pizza and ice cream to get in the role. Like, his wife's like, what are you doing? He's like, I'm getting in my role. Get me some more chicken bomb heroes. It was so funny.
He did an episode of Hot Ones this season with Sean Evans, and they were like, it coincided with the release of the Batman, and they were talking about it. And I think he said that you had like to do the prosthesis, I think it was like 4 hours in the chair per time. Like,
that's wild.
The funniest thing I saw, like they did, like maybe it was vanity or some like prestigious or bougie or elite outlet, when they show like the career trajectories, like they'll show like Bryan Cranston, his career, or William Dafoe. Like, I got them all watched later. They did a sit down interview with Colin Farrell, and he's like, yeah, I actually, Matthew Reeves gave me so much flexibility in the character. And then you, hey, sweetheart, grab on these. Hey, that's how we do it. And you see like this delicate, articulate Colin Farrell. And then you just see the character. He leaned into it. Oh, man. John Turturro was phenomenal. Yeah. Do we want to see a sequel, or do we like this as a one-off, just like the Joker? And it's just a piece of movie lore. Like, what are you guys' thoughts on that?
I think we'll wind up getting another one. Feels like there's too much money on the table not to. That's what it really comes down to.
Yeah, I agree. And with the Joker scene at the end, like they kind of tease that second one's coming, where he and the Riddler are going to team up. They're going to break out of Arkham.
Right. They left a lot of doors open.
Bingo, bingo, bingo. All right, well, we got two more doors to open. Alexander Volkanovsky or Chimaev, what do you guys want to address first?
Dealer's choice.
Your call.
I think Volkanovsky's performance stands out more to me. It's like, yeah, he's a killer. Hamzat showed that he's ready for war, wanted to show his stand-up. He's obviously a legitimate top five in the welterweight, one of the deepest divisions. But Volkanovsky putting on a master's class clinic or seminar, as Joe Rogan said. Everybody goes crazy over that word seminar. Go, like, everybody's like, I couldn't sum it up any better. I'm like, yes, Rogan nailed it. That's his job. Alexander Volkanovsky, one of the greatest champions in the sport. Is he the greatest featherweight champion of all time?
It's getting to a point where it's going to be a debate. I mean, I personally would still say Aldo for now, but like, I don't know, man. Volkanovski, he's looked untouchable in his last few fights, man. Like, I know there was that third round against Ortega, but you know, he got it. He was in danger, then he wasn't. I don't know though, man. I mean, Volk's performance was really fucking impressive. I mean, Zombie, maybe a little bit diminished from you know, his true prime, but still an incredibly game opponent, still a top five featherweight in the world. And Volk's just beat the brakes off him, man. Volk blew his doors off. I mean, those striking numbers, I think it was like 120 to 40 something significant strikes. It was a wild, wild disparity. I will say I liked the stoppage from Herb Dean. That was a good stoppage. We didn't really need to see any more of that. You got to save that guy from himself sometimes. So the standing stoppage, rare in MMA, but warranted in this case.
Yeah, I agree. And like I would still say Aldo is the greatest featherweight champion. I would agree there, but it's getting close to where, you know, he wins a couple more. There's going to be that real talk.
Andy, are we ignoring, and Harry, jumping after Andy, are we ignoring the fact that they did a head-to-head matchup, UFC 237 in Brazil?
Yeah, that's fair. But I don't know, you know what I mean. That doesn't necessarily determine who the greater champion is when you're looking at the sum of the parts as a whole, you know?
Fair. But then when you see how, I mean, this is the MMA math thing. You see how Holloway did twice against Aldo. You see how Volkanovski did twice against Holloway. Yeah, they weren't blowouts, but oh, man, he's phenomenal. He moves like a bantamweight, hits like a lightweight. The dude is just on a rise. What's next for him? Is it Max? Or would you like to see him test the waters at, I don't know, bantamweight or lightweight? I don't think you can make bantamweight, but what are your thoughts about what's next? Take it away, Andy.
That's a good question, man. It's a good question. I think they wind up doing Max next. I think that, you know, that was supposed to be this fight. Max got hurt in training camp, had to pull out. So I would assume that's the fight that comes next. But yeah, he's in a weird spot where, like, you know, him and Max have kind of lapped the field. And if he goes out and he beats Max a third time, then I don't really know what's left for him at featherweight. You know what I mean? And the problem is, I think he'd be real small for 55, just height wise. You know what I mean? He usually has a height disadvantage anyway, but I don't know, man. It's a really tough question to answer. I mean, maybe Arnold Allen can come up with some big wins and be an interesting contender. I'm not really sure. I'm not sure who that guy who will kind of separate themselves from the field is.
Yeah, I'm in agreement there. Like Max is a logistical choice, But, you know, if he goes up to 155, that weight class is incredibly deep. And there's already like five or six people that should have or will be getting title shots within the next year or two. So to throw Volkanovski in there, you know, you would think that he would get up, he'd be up in the top pretty quick. You know, now you're talking seven or eight people who have legitimate claims to the 155 title.
What's more intriguing, Andy? Volkanovski, Gaethje? Saying Gaethje went, yes, I'm picking Gaethje. Volkanovski, Gaethje, or Volkanovski, Cejudo?
I would go Gaethje. I feel like that fight would be a ton of fun to watch.
Wow.
That would probably be a war.
Yes. I think Oliveira would just tower over him. That'd be huge.
Well, that's the thing. I think most of these guys are going to tower over him at 55 at least.
Max is pretty tall.
Yeah. But I would honestly like to see that Cejudo fight. I'd be interested to see what Cejudo, because I think Volk is basically the only guy Cejudo can come up to 45 and fight because of his height and his size. So this is like his only chance to be like, yeah, fuck it, let's do the triple champion thing. So that would be compelling to me, and that would be new and interesting at least, you know? Because listen, I know he's the king of cringe, whatever. I don't like the shtick at all, but you watch him in the cage, he's incredible. You know what I mean? Henry Cejudo is an incredible fighter, even if he might be a little past his prime at this point. But I would like to see that.
And what were you saying something, Andy?
I was in agreement. Like that's a fair point. You know, Cejudo, you know, would, because Cejudo's like 2'3", so he's got a It's nice when me at 5'7", I can look at Henry Cejudo and be like, I'm still taller than you, even though you can kick my ass.
Dude, Connor says 5'9". I think he's like 5'7". So
yeah, no way.
He can walk on his arms now too. I think he just just does pull-ups and everything. But again, we're being joined by @Andy_Sukov and @BB Harry Mack. Last but not least, this guy, Brendan Schaub, on his podcast, he says the UFC 273 poster should have just been Hamzat's beard and then a bunch of the five other guys mixed in the beard to fill out the bill. Man, Harry, how was the lines looking? I feel like everybody was expecting another stoppage, a submission over freaking Gilbert Burns, a world jiu-jitsu champion. In my write-up before the fight, I said, this will be a war. This will be a decision. I wasn't sure. I went with Hamzat probably because of the hype and all the momentum, but I was not sure, but I did know it would be a war and it would go to decision. How were the lines looking and how'd you play this one?
Yeah, man. I mean, the lines were wide. It was wide. So I took a little sprinkle on Gilbert, nothing too big, but okay. I thought it was worth playing. You know what I mean? Easily the hardest test of Hamzat's career as we saw, and you know, he won that fight by the skin of his teeth. That third round, that goes a little differently at the end there. That could be Gilbert's fight, or Gilbert could have finished him in the second. He came close. So, you know, I'm perfectly okay to being on the other side of that every time. I think it was a wild play to play Hamzat at like -500. But the only other thing I played was a -160 fight to leave round one. So fight to complete one round was -160, which felt like phenomenal value to me.
That's pretty good. What about you, Andy? Yeah. Are you like me? And maybe you'll talk about betting, talk about lines, but you won't put too much shekels on.
I could talk about it. I wish I could put down hundreds of dollars on it, but like I'll do like $5 here, $10 there. I just didn't have any money in my account, but I also would have put down on Burns at what he was getting. Like, you know, as such a huge underdog, and given his ranking and who he's fought and beaten, like Hamzat hadn't fought a guy like that yet. So I figured Burns was gonna really give him for a run for his money, which he did, and if there was like a fourth and fifth round, I think Burns might have been able to take that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You would hope he would catch that second win. But I want to start with you, Andy. What do we got next for the Hamzat? You know, if you look at the top of the welterweight division, look at the schedule, you got Edwards, Usman 2, which is booked. Covington just coming off a fight. Usman, obviously, Hamzat really hot off his fight. Is the Covington Khamzat just there, or would the UFC jump the queue with Khamzat, put him in the title fight, whether it's Edwards or Usman? What are your thoughts on scheduling, and who would you like to see next for Khamzat?
I think he should get one more top five fight before getting the title. Like, yes, he did just beat the number two guy, but you know, you want to see, like, I don't want to say, was it a fluke? Because it clearly wasn't. Khamzat's an incredible fighter, but I'd like to see what he does against another top five person who might have a different style than Gilbert Burns. So maybe you do make that Colby fight first and then see how that, and then see how Usman Edwards goes before putting Khamzat up there.
And what about you, Harry? Are you going Covington? Are you worried that the Covington might do what he does to everybody, just wear out everybody not named Usman, and then you lose that mystique of that undefeated Chechen, just the, and you kind of lose the shine on making that undefeated fighter for the belt. What are your thoughts?
See, I honestly don't think that Colby poses a huge threat to Khamzat. I think that is stylistically a plus matchup for Khamzat. Okay. And look, Colby, I mean, Khamzat took bombs from Gilbert last night. I mean, he was throwing shots, and Colby, phenomenal wrestler, absolutely. He doesn't have power in his hands. He does not carry power in his strikes. He doesn't. He just doesn't. And I don't think that he is a threat to Khamzat in the striking at all. And I think Khamzat has enough to negate his wrestling. I think that would be a plus matchup for Khamzat. But I mean, I hope they make that fight just because I'm a Leon guy. And I think Leon Edwards deserves his fucking title shot. And I'm glad he's finally getting it. It's long overdue. So I'm just glad we're finally getting that fight. But I actually do think that performance last night, something that I thought after watching that is that I think Leon would also beat Khamzat.
Wow. Why?
I'm picking Leon over Usman. I think Leon's going to beat Kamaru Usman.
That's bold.
I think both obviously have evolved a lot in their fights, but I think Leon has basically the perfect style to fight Kamaru Usman right now.
Interesting.
Very good in the clinch, very good with those elbows off the break and throwing big strikes off of grappling exchanges. And he's got plus takedown defense. I think Leon's going to be the guy to do it. And I also just think Usman's getting older and that knee is kind of starting to catch up to him.
That might be a plus 180, right? Is it out yet?
It's got to be out somewhere. Let me take a look. But yeah, I think Leon's definitely the dog.
Ooh, man, I didn't even think about if Usman was to lose that fight. Do they do the trilogy fight?
They'd have to.
Yeah, they'd have to.
Back to back?
Usman's been champion for as long as he has. Like, you would think he would get the immediate titles to the rematch.
That's true, too. Yeah, for that caveat. Covington.
Leon plus 220, Usman minus 260.
Are we going to get a wrestling? What was it?
Usman minus 260, Leon plus 220.
There you go, man. I think that's going to shrink. I think people are going to see what you see. Vegas will see the, I mean, I think Usman has to like piece everything together. He's kind of like Frankenstein. I've seen this long warm-ups, how much he puts into just getting his body hot to be at full speed. It takes him a lot at this age. I think
there's a lot of miles, man. A lot of miles on that body.
He doesn't run anymore. He's just doing the elliptical and like the Harvard row team machine, like whatever that
is. His knee is apparently just like bone on bone at this point.
I don't know.
We'll see. I mean, he's a great champion. Great champion. But
good number to jump on nowadays. But with Khamzat and Colby, Andy, are we getting a wrestling match? Are we getting an Abu Dhabi classic trial wrestling match? Are we going to get the two grapplers cancel each other? Now we got the slugfest.
I'd like to see the slugfest.
Now, can that sell a pay-per-view as the headliner? And then we do like Valentina underneath it, Amanda underneath it. Like, can Khamzat and Colby sell it alone, or are they going to be like a co-main 5-round non-title fight? Like, where do you see the UFC? You got two stars essentially. Where do you think the UFC would put that fight on a pay-per-view card?
I would, depending on where you do it. Like, if you do that like in like maybe like in the South, like in like Texas or Florida, you might be able to put that as a main event. Because you'll have the pro Colby crowd will be very much into it. Like, you do that internationally, I unless you did it like in Sweden, I would say like a 5-round co-main.
Wow. Okay. Okay. It's hard to gauge. I really didn't think Hamza was that big of a star, but he got a million followers on Instagram, like following the Reese McKee beatdown.
Dude, his fight was doing like 2x, 3x the socials of like the co-main and the main event for the UFC this week on like YouTube and social engagement and all that. It's crazy, man.
Is he more talented than Patty and O'Malley? Is that
Patty? Absolutely. O'Malley, yet to be seen.
Got you. And all right, guys, any side notes from the event? I know there was some excellent back and forth fight. Big win by Dern. Big win by Madsen. Mickey Gall. My goodness, who saw that fight?
That was, yeah, yeah.
Any other takeaways for you guys? And I really appreciate the time.
Good on Dana White for donating that 10 grand to Malat's coach's daughter.
It's true. What about you, Harry?
More funk.
More funk, yes. We got the funk, not Andy. Gotta get that funk, not Andy. Andy, come on, man. And I said this to my friend. I was like, would you say this to Aljo's face that you picked against him? He goes, 100%, 100%. Now he was a cup of tequila and a couple of slices of pizza deep. Maybe the pepperoni was talking, but... Oh man.
I was pulling for Aljo. I just thought Jan won the fight. I would still be respectful to say congratulations to him, because you know it's the respectable thing to do.
Okay. Save face. Because I'm passing out those forms that Aljo put on Twitter and Instagram.
That was gold. That was real good.
He's handling it well. Good for him, man. It's amazing. But guys, I really appreciate the time. @Andy_Sukoff. Harry Mack @BB Harry Mack. Guys, I really appreciate the time. And as always, I don't know. I need a catchphrase at this point. Does anybody have a catchphrase? I'm vengeance.
appreciate you, man. My pleasure, yeah, as always.
Later, yeah, boys.
Thanks for having us.
Peace. Man, those dudes are cool, fun, relaxing. Harry brought the energy. This is a Sunday night recording. I'm kind of laid back. The dust has settled. It was a lot of energy and buildup and anxiety leading up to this card, especially with Aljo. Every card brings a sense of heightened Ike, but especially when it's a local guy, a guy that you get to see more often than other fighters that I don't know, it's like you grew up under the same sun, so you feel that you can relate a lot more to them. And for Aljo, for Team Saralango to get the huge win, just was awesome. And Harry's still, he's still riding high. I hope he made some money. It sounded like he made some money from last night. And of course, Andy's exhausted. I appreciate him giving me some time after he's worked many long days. And for him to give me some of his time was very much appreciated. Andy, Harry, Andy, thank you guys. And I hope you guys enjoyed this recap of UFC 273 from your boy, the Ike Feldman from theikedecon.com. More to come. Kind of been off the recording side of things because I just completed the gray area TGA featuring Justin Montavo. It was an amazing experience. Not the editing. No, everything was really fun and really cool, and I really poured my heart into this project. It's my first official documentary in my senior project in college. I documented head injuries in combat sports and football, and that was fun. That was maybe like a 20-minute project. This, 30 minutes, more heart, more energy, less sleepless nights, less alcoholism, and just scatterbrained all over and not having a grasp of my schedule. This was a lot more constructed, calculated, and I really think it shows in the presentation. So the link is in the bio. It's the most recent video in the Ikedecon bio, or it won't be, because once I upload this will be the most recent. But Check it out, guys. The Gray Area, featuring Justin Montalvo, capturing the lead-up to his Bellator 274 fight against Corey Samuels. It was about 6 weeks in the lead-up, so I hope you enjoy it. I, of course, enjoyed the process of stalking him in his car. He didn't know I did this documentary, actually. I'm happy that my stalking skills and, you know, when they say, hey, do you follow me on social media? I'm like, no, I like to follow you in real life. So it really paid off. He doesn't know the documentary happened. I was a fly on the wall, literally just discreet. You would never know I was around. And yeah, the project worked out. So I think you guys will like it. Thank you and goodbye. Well, peace. I'm trying to figure out what do you call it? How to close out episodes. Maybe I'll just close it with my dog. Jeez. Peace.